Hi, welcome to BA Brew. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Debbie.
And I'm Danny. Hello.
And I'm delighted that Danny's here joining us all the way from Holland to talk about what I think is going to be quite an interesting subject. Lots of different avenues we could go down on today's brew. Danny, do you want to give an overview of what it is that you'd like to talk about on today's brew with us?
Yes. It started with that we are using the BA services framework to sort of position ourselves within the new bigger company that our little company has grown into. And then immediately we started discussing about the value of the BA services framework, or in my opinion, the value of any other model, in that such a model, such a technique, such an example thing should not be followed blindly. Because when you do, you will not succeed. And especially as BAs, we need to be able to take up a technique, take up a method, and adapt it to the context that we are working in. Because we are not working in, you might say, some factory where we do everything every day same way, which means that you follow the recipe each day, or each time, or each occurrence of producing your whatever you're producing. No, we are almost always in a unique situation, in a unique context, which means that however helpful models may be, I use them all the time, you should always think about it, you might say, in reverse. You're not taking the technique, taking the model, taking the framework, and follow the recipe. No, you take the context, you assess your job, your assignment, so to say, and then you use the technique in the best way possible for this context.
Interesting. So this is the root of our discussion. So I'm going to go to Debbie next and say, what are your thoughts on this application of models and adapting them to context? Any thoughts on that? And indeed, the BA service framework and adapting that, Debbie?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because when Denny raised this subject, I thought this is exactly the conversation we should be having, because I've never, ever followed anything. I'm not even very good at following recipes in a cookbook, to be honest with you. I always think, oh, I can just adapt that slightly. And the problem with frameworks isn't the framework. It's the way it's used. And it's the same with methods, and it's the same with techniques. So if we take the BA service framework, when I developed that, it was an attempt to give something standardized that took a service view of business analysis, but it was always intended to be adapted. So what I wanted it to be was something that gave people a basis from which they could move. So a basis that they could use to adapt. And in talking to Denny, it's so clear that there's such a risk if people just use frameworks like this as being the absolute truth that you have to follow. And there's an even bigger risk if they think, and if I follow it, as Denny says, then I'm going to be successful, because that's definitely not my experience of anything, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. If you follow something blindly, well, Jonathan, I'm going to throw this back at you. You're well known for this outcome-focused approach, yeah? Mm-hmm. And actually, following blindly is the opposite of an outcome focus, I would say. Do you think?
Yeah. So adapting to the context and understanding your context is absolutely critical. And I'm a bit like you, Debbie. I never follow a technique in the way that it's explained to me. I always think, oh, how would I actually use that? And then adapt it to the context. And so as an example, we use PESTLE as a technique to help us to analyze the external environment beyond an organization's control. But I've seen people use it to analyze the internal factors. What's the political factors inside the organization? What are the economics inside the organization? What's the people in the organization they're using ES? And it's not quite how it was intended, but if someone's found use of adapting PESTLE to the internal context and it helps them to solve a problem or realize an opportunity or understand what's going on in the culture, that's great for me. I'm kind of like, that's okay. Even though the book says external, use it for forces beyond the organization's control, if we want to adapt it and use it for an internal purpose because we've got an outcome in mind, then let's not have dogmatism and let's not say that that's wrong, but that if it's driving the outcome, then it might be useful. And I think it's about thinking, and business analysis is about analyzing the business, analyzing the context that you're in. And so if people are thinking and driving towards outcomes, then we shouldn't be constrained by a model because of the way a model's written. It shouldn't stop you doing that thinking. Danny, do you want to jump in?
But it might also be connected to, you might say, your level of experience in this work. Because if you are shown a need and completely, of it looks complete, a need model, business, the BA services framework, or any model, any other model, PESTEL, it has a neat row of elements and factors that you need to consider, especially when you're beginning. You might want to hold on to that because you think, oh, clever people have thought about it. They have devised this set of steps, this series of steps, which we need to follow. And yeah, if I cook something, I start at the recipe, Debbie, because I don't know much about cooking, etc. So this is my, you might say, my guidance. So I start from there. But then again, a model, a method is also thought about, devised by someone with experience in a certain context. But I think that sometimes I think if a model or a technique looks very good, that might also drive the risk. Because if it looks so good, it promises, if you follow this, you will succeed. And we all know that the more experience you get, the more you are able to adapt it to say, oh, this might work in a standard situation. But I'm not in a standard situation right now. So I've seen people struggling to fill out all the elements of PESTEL because they think all the elements need to be there. And they don't. If it's enough for you to go on, it's enough. Same goes with the BA services framework. It has a nice fundament, but you should use it as the fundament to start from or to adapt it. And because it's laid out in that neat series of what you might consider as steps, you're tempted to think, oh, if I follow these steps, voila. So maybe we should not present methods or frameworks as neatly and as good looking as they are.
Oh no, those icons took a long time to decide on.
I know.
I think it's quite interesting though, because I also believe something that sounds like a contradiction to this, but it isn't. I believe that you need the fundamentals. So, you know, if you take any technique, anyone you like, you know, just an ordinary swim lane diagram, for example, if you understand the absolute standard practice or the good practice associated with modeling a business process, you can then adapt from it. If, however, you don't understand the fundamentals, then you're making it up. And there's a big difference between those two things. And I've seen both play out. And I'm telling you now, the making it up when you don't have the fundamentals is not a good road to go down. Because what the frameworks and the tools give you is quite often quite a comprehensive view. So they tell you, you know, what you should be thinking about. And then sometimes in the context, that doesn't all apply, or maybe something else applies a bit more importantly or something like that. And therefore, you can adapt. But if you don't know the method or the framework or the tool, then you're just inventing how you might do it, and you're likely to miss things And you're also likely to come up with something that's inconsistent with how other people are working, possibly within your team or project. So I'm a great believer that understanding this practice that is, you know, good fundamentals is a strong basis for adaptation. Not having that basis is a very weak basis for doing the work.
And there's a lot of risk of people just making up and completely winging it without knowing what the tool is, what it was intended for, what the fundamentals are. The other challenges that I think there are from too much customization or adaptation are it creates a learning barrier for people that are new to the model or new to the technique. So if you're trying to learn swim lane diagrams for the first time, and you've got a very experienced person who's adapted some of the notation because they think that's a good idea, you've created a barrier to entry in terms of learning that technique because it looks different, it's being applied differently and might have slightly nuanced rules and ways of working around it. And the same for the BA service framework. If we've got a heavily adapted BA service framework that doesn't look anything like the original, that person trying to learn, well, why is this wording being used and why has it been positioned in that way, could create a barrier to entry for someone learning. The other big issue, I think, of too much customization is it's a barrier to collaboration because we don't have a common or standard language to talk to with each other. And it sounds like I'm contradicting myself as well because I'm saying, yeah, you can adapt these tools. You've got to have knowledge before you adapt and think about these issues, because if you've got 20, 30, 50, 100 BAs or more trying to use your customized variant of a technique or tool, you've just caused confusion. And I always think that some degree of standardization, a standard, is needed. Now, that standard should be subject to continuous improvement and written in alignment with the context, but you still need a standard. And without the standard, you have variants and a possible barrier to confusion. And I think we do need to talk about standards in the BA profession. I know we've talked about it on the pod previously. The example I'll give, if I'm writing music, which I can't write music, I'm not a composer, but I can use standard music notation to write, some sort of symphony, Beethoven's symphony, but I could also use it to write a R&B tune. And I'm still using the same notation, but I don't have any barriers to creativity, but I am able to share my knowledge using standard music notation. And I think we as business analysts, change professionals, absolutely need standards so we can talk to each other, because otherwise we're going to talk at cross purposes. Danny, do you want to jump in on
this? Yeah, I want to jump in because, of course, we need standards. And, of course, we cannot neglect all the experience and thinking that has gone into standards. But especially when you're starting out as a business analyst, if you're being shown or handed a beautiful tool, for instance, yes, to create swim lanes with an IT system that does a lot of work for you, you are tempted to think that is what you need to do. But you're not needing, that's not your job. Your job is to investigate a process or to improve a process. And your job is not to create a beautiful model with lots of beautiful icons in colors or what have you. And sometimes the best standards are the simple fundamental standards, which help you to understand why you are doing what you're doing and why you are using a tool, a technique, a model to help you with your job or your assignment, but that is not the purpose of your assignment. At least most of the time, sometimes you're hired to create documentation. That's a different thing. But most of the time, we are hired to investigate, to analyze, to propose alternatives, and we use the tools. We use the methods for that. I once worked with a very sophisticated tool where the whole team, you might say the Scrum team or something like that, it was before Agile, but the whole team was sent to a three-day course to learn that tool in that IT system. And we came back and we thought, voila, now we have it. This is perfect. Now we just create things in the system, but no one understood because they did not learn the thing, and we forgot the fundamental thing. The fundamental thing is business analysis. We are not model artists. We're business analysts. So that's different. Yeah. So we need tools. We can use tools. But there's always the danger of having, of confusing the tool with the thing that we are doing it for.
But this is where I think business analysis becomes a profession, because actually you need all of it. And that's the key thing for me. You need those skills of being able to use certain tools to draw diagrams. You need the skills of understanding how techniques work and why they work in a particular way. Something like the BA service framework is actually at three levels, which is the first is the why. Why is a service relevant and appropriate? What's the value proposition it offers? Yeah. And then the next level down from the why is, so what are the activities that should be carried out? But that is tailored to context. But then you get into the how. How are we going to carry out those activities? Which techniques are we going to use? And then we're into all sorts of more tailoring. But the professional business analyst is able to answer those questions in the context and use the tools to build the documentation or whatever, and to apply thinking on top of it so that they understand what they're trying to do in that particular situation. That, to me, is what makes the job so fabulous, is the fact that it's all of those things. And we have to have that toolkit of skills in all sorts of different directions and knowledge about all sorts of different things. And we have to be able to overlay on that the ability to analyze it all. Brilliant. And that's where you get a great BA.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the tailoring of, for example, the BA service framework, there might be someone out there that creates a BA service for Moscow prioritization of requirements, or something like they're going to manage the requirements traceability matrix document. And what they've got there is their hows. That's how you prioritize, that's how you manage a traceability, but it's not a what and it's not a why. And so there's a risk that in tailoring, the person doesn't understand the fundamentals of as are set for the BA service framework, and they tailor in a way that perhaps isn't as useful as it might be if they've understood the fundamentals. But if they create a service, and one that I've come across that happens in BA teams, there's this, and I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but this proxy product owner service that some BAs offer. So they offer the opportunity to BAs to act as a product owner in the absence of an actual product owner. And that makes sense to me, but not the naming a specific tool as what the name of the service is and this is why the service exists. It's kind of, there's different degrees of tailoring, and some you might say, well, that's a positive tailoring, and some are not so good, I would argue, but there might be different views. Any thoughts on that, Debbie? Have you seen those tailoring where they've mixed up the levels?
Yeah, I have. And I think it's quite interesting because, to me, you have to ask yourself right at the start of this, what service does my customer want from me, you know, or from the BA team? What outcome do they want? What value proposition do they want me to offer? If you start there, then actually you're at the right level. And if the organization says, I want a product owner service delivered by somebody or a group of people within this team, then that is a service that is offered. Then you start moving into, okay, so what does that service have to carry out in terms of the activities? And then which techniques do we use? How do we do it? So I think as long as you focus on that, what is it that our customer wants us to offer, you're fine. and then it's clear. Without that, you're not taking a surface view.
But that also that also means that you have to be aware of those levels know and to understand that the part that you are playing in this specific assignment is part of those levels. So you understand the before and after activities in order to do this activity, and actually again knowing not per se how you are doing this, but why you are doing this, what you are doing, which again comes to the point that first assess what you are need to do, and then use the proper tool in the proper way because you know what part it plays. Instead of getting an assignment and I need to fill out all the details here, because that brings you to maybe a perfect set of documentation, but it doesn't serve the purpose what it was intended to.
Yeah. And that focus on outcomes, the purpose, I think really key. One of the areas where I've seen a lot of dogmatism, I would say, is in the application of agile methods. And in one of the organizations that I worked in, they set a new strategy that they were going to use agile methods. And they asked every single project to answer a question on a report to say yes or no, whether or not they were agile. And what lots of project managers then did was they set up a agile board and they set up daily stand-ups or daily scrums. And what they did through using that technique, they falsely, in my view, they then decreed that they were agile. And they didn't understand the philosophy of agile, the base principles, they didn't understand the methods, but they'd hooked on to a technique, daily stand-up, agile board, and then said, oh, that must mean we're agile now. And so this misapplication and misunderstanding of techniques and lack of focus on outcomes and lack of common understanding and shared understanding of what we mean by the terminology, I think's a bit of an issue here. And I've seen it particularly in agile methods, but also in other areas where people think the technique's going to solve their problem, and it doesn't. It's you, the change professional, you, the analyst, that's solving the problem. Yeah,
that's a great example of, you might say, I don't know if it's the right word in English, but you might say if you're super only on the surface using the technique, but still you fail to understand why you are using it, and again, why you are doing this assignment, you might end up with beautifully documented nonsense.
Yes. The stuff of nonsense. Yeah.
It's interesting because back to what you were talking about, Jonathan, I know a company that adopted Scrum and did the following approach. You know, we're going to follow exactly what it says and what the principles say. And so they did iterative development and they released new increments and new versions of their product very frequently. Now, received wisdom is that you're delivering value through doing that. Okay. What actually happened in practice was a number of the customers of this product, and it was a software product, asked the company to stop it because it was so disruptive to their working operations. And they said, this does not work because you keep changing your product, you keep adding new features, and we don't want them because we want stability. We want to be able to operate with this product, adapt our processes and make everything work so that our customers know what to expect. And I thought that was really interesting because that was that dogmatic, it says this is good, therefore we must do it, without thinking, what is the product? What's the customer want it for? Who are the customers? How are they going to actually carry out their work? And having ignored all of those, ended up potentially losing quite a lot of customers because the customers were so unhappy. And you can just see how that can happen when you just follow and you don't think.
Brilliant. Danny, in the pre-pod recording, I think I mispronounced that, you shared a quote And I'm not sure if we've got the who is it from, but Danny, are you happy to share that quote that you talked to Debbie and I about before we hit record on today's pod?
Yeah, that was a quote on more on modeling in general. I think a famous British statistician once said, "All models are wrong, but some are useful." And that was the quote you're referring to. And by that, he meant a model, a technique, a framework will never be the whole real truth, will never be representing the real world in all its complexities. And that is the weakness. And at the same time, it's the strength of a model, because it can help you to concentrate on the things you need to analyze, the things you need to improve, the things you need to change. But with that, he also means, and he also, at least that's what I read in this statement, is that you use it with understanding of what you want to achieve. And you're not using it to create the model again. Because if you're using it to create the model, you end up with a model which is nothing more than that. It's just a model. And what good is it? Well, if it can help you to communicate, if it can help you to understand things, if it can help you to point out and to focus on the issues at hand, etc., then it will be useful. But it will never be the full truth. That goes for any model, that, again, you need to understand the fundamentals. And I think, therefore, the best models, you know, in the book by you and Debbie about business analysis techniques, you stay with the fundamentals of each technique and each method, maybe in order to prevent people think that this technique or method is the thing that you need to do. No, you just stick to it's the fundamental to help you with your work. Same way that a building construction craftsman first assesses what he needs to do, build a wall or drill a hole, and then takes out the proper tool to do the job. He doesn't go with a shiny new drilling machine to the construction site and say, "Where can I apply this?" No, that's not the way it works.
That's a brilliant analogy. I sometimes quote Dave Snowden, and he did a talk at the BA conference quite a few years ago. Debbie will probably remember the year. I always forget the year, but he said we need more chefs and less recipe book followers. And I think it links to our discussion today about models and thinking and thinking about outcomes. That if we're, and I'm not very good at cooking either, Danny, I sometimes miss steps in a recipe if I'm trying to bake something. But if I really understand what I'm doing, I'm a chef. If I'm just following the steps in a recipe or a method or prescribed technique, I'm not really thinking. I'm putting that onus on thinking on the author of the recipe or the method. And we need more people thinking about outcomes, I think.
But don't get me wrong. I still think that it's very good that if you start in a restaurant, the chefs say, well, first you learn to make a good basic sauce.
Yes, yes.
Because you first have to learn those kind of fundamentals, because out of that knowledge comes your ability to adapt and be a chef and not following the recipe because it says so.
Mm-hmm. Right, I'm going to go around each of you. Any final thoughts on this subject before we close, Debbie?
Not really. I mean, I think the overriding thing for me is always switch your brain on, basically. I'm never ever now going to get over Denny's image of someone with a bright shiny drill going around looking for a wall to drill holes in, and that's me. I've got the image that tells me thinking is necessary.
Brilliant, Danny. Any final thoughts?
No, I can't compete with that beautiful thought by Debbie. It's
hard, isn't it? Switch your brain on. I'm now thinking about people. And someone was telling me the other day that they know someone that mixes coffee and tea in the same mug. So they have a coffee tea. And for me, that's just the work of, that's just wrong. Like, it should either be coffee or tea. But obviously that chef thinks that those two things should be mixed. I don't think they should be. But it's kind of like, what's the outcome? What does it taste like? It's kind of, you know, switch your brain on. Should you really be doing that? Mocha as well. Don't get me started on mocha with hot chocolate and coffee mixed together. Is that a good or bad thing? And there's different views on this, but, you know, choosing the right ingredients to drive an outcome, choosing the right models should be really useful. So, Danny, I want to say thank you for joining us for today's brew. If anyone's interested in hearing more about models and Danny's thoughts on models, I understand that you've been accepted to speak at the IRM Business Analysis Conference Europe 2025 coming in September. Danny, what's the title of your talk? If you can remember what the title is, what should people look for?
The title of the talk will be Mind the Gap. And with that, I mean the gap between a model and the real world, which again ties into Debbie's phrase, you know, switch your brain on and remember that the gap is there.
Brilliant, brilliant. So thank you for joining us, Danny. Debbie, great to discuss these things with you as always. Thank you to everyone that's listened, watched to today's pod. Please do share with us your ideas for future podcasts. Email us at babrew@assistkd.com. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.